Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of William H. Kennedy. And William is a traditional Catholic who's written extensively about the homosexuality and Catholic seminaries, and certainly has put working on a video we hope to have out very, very soon, going into the background of this terrible scourge that has affected his own church. But, of course, it's a reflection on all of Christianity. But William has written extensively on the occult forces which are at work within our society today. And if you haven't been to his website, you really need to go there, because he goes into the background of so many of the organizations, the Skull and Bone Society and the Bilderbergers and all of these groups we talk about that have such a profound impact on our way of life, on our government. But what most people don't understand are the spirits of forces that energize Skull and Bones. It's not simply by accident that they have the swastikas painted on the walls, decorating the walls of the tomb there at Yale University where they live, or that they kneel in front of a replica of Lucifer when they swear their initiation. And these are the people who become the leaders of our country, even the President of the United States, who okays torture. It's perfectly all right to torture people as long as I say so. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you have to understand that we live in a world, a material world, but there is a spiritual world out there. And William has done a wonderful job of providing a center where you can go and get information on all of this. William, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me on Radio Liberty, Dr. Stan. It's great to be here on Friday the 13th.
And, of course, you know, this last week, why we've seen a couple of mass shootings. Somebody, a young man, certainly prepared a list of the people who'd hurt him, and he went out and killed his mother and his grandmother and his uncle. He killed 9 people, just shot them down here in cold blood. And then over in Germany, somebody killed 15 people. Immediately the cry goes out for gun control, but of course what we really need is to have people armed to stop these people, these murderers. People have no defense against a man with a gun. And believe me, when guns are outlawed, only the criminal and psychopaths will have guns. So what we need is, of course, to arm the people to be able to protect themselves from this. And I think we're going to see much more of this, because there's a very dark spirit that is, of course, encompassing our society. And those of you who heard my interview with Russ Dizdar last night on the Black Awakening, he talks to many of these people who have had demonic spirits, and they tell him that the time is coming, and very soon, when the literally millions of people with disassociated personalities here in the United States will be triggered to begin this reign of terror that's coming, so you best be prepared for it. Well, anyway, William, why don't you pick up this story, because I know that you're on the front lines of trying to educate people about this very real spiritual battle that's being waged today.
Well, Dr. Stan, number one, what we have to realize about our current economic meltdown is that this was caused by the Skull and Bone Society, which, as you mentioned earlier, is a fraternity at Yale. And I have incontrovertible proof that they caused this economic crash and that they are planning on continuing it.
All right. Well, now, what is your incontrovertible proof that you're speaking of?
Well, quite frankly, in 2004, William Donaldson, a Skull and Bones member, was the head of the Security and Exchange Commission, and he set in a new law called the Net Cap Rule at the request of Paulson, who was then the head of Goldman Sachs, and he essentially turned over the power of the Security and Exchange Commission to the banks themselves.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, of course, if you turn the power of to regulate the banks over to the banks, like the fox to watch the hen cows, and of course the difficulty is we know Henry Paulson made almost $1 billion. The figure in Wikipedia, I think, is $800 million as a CEO of Goldman Sachs. And of course, but basically what Paulson did was to lead a group of people to Washington, D.C. in the year 2004 to lobby so that they could write these derivative contracts with no backing, write insurance policies, but no backing for them, no reserve funds, so when they crash, well, you don't have to worry. The American taxpayers will bail them out because Goldman Sachs is, and J.P. Morgan Chase and Morgan Stanley and the others are too big to fail. So we'll take the money from the American taxpayers and bail out these big banks. I think they're too big to keep going, and we better let them fail, but go right ahead.
Well, Dr. Stan, when you consider that William Donaldson, as I said, he caused this. He is a skull and bones man. And this is by design. And anyone who doesn't believe me that it's by design, they should read a book by Harry Brown called The Economic Time Bomb, which was written in 1989, in which he predicted that the savings, loan, and mortgage industry would crash the entire world economy. Now, when you consider that William Donaldson caused this problem, now we have a new president, Barack Obama, who claims to be solving it, but his chief economic advisor is another skull and bonesman named Austin Goolsbee, who was known as the Ghoul. That was his nickname at the Skull and Bone Society. So we have a ghoul from a Satanist organization running our economy now. That is a true fact. You can look that up on the Internet, anyone out there. Or go to williamhkennedy.com, and I have a lot of this information there for you. Now, when you consider that you will hear nothing about these people's skull and bones membership, just demonstrates that the mainstream media downplays cases of Satanism or the satanic aspect of crimes. Now, consider William Donaldson's chief advisor was a man named Bernard Madoff, who is now, as we speak, sitting in a jail cell for running the largest Ponzi scheme in history. He was one of Donaldson's chief advisor. His niece married one of William Donaldson's lieutenants, so there's a biological link between these criminals. But basically, Donaldson, with the net cap rule and letting people like Bernard Madoff run wild, and lots of people were turning in Bernard Madoff for many, many years, but Donaldson just ignored the reports. All those people wouldn't have lost their savings if William Donaldson was doing his job.
Hold on, I will be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course our guest is William H. Kennedy, and we're talking about the financial collapse, and of course William thinks it was all skull and bones. I think it was, of course, this whole brotherhood of darkness, which all interlocks: the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, and certainly the skull and bones plays a large part. There's only 15 members inducted into this organization every year, not more than a few hundred alive at any time. But, of course, they hold the key positions in government, and, of course, they have dominated the American government going back into the late 19th century. These people have become presidents of the United States. Other, certainly even before George Herbert Walker Bush became president, I believe that William Howard Taft, as I remember, was a skull.
Yes, Taft was a skull and bone.
Right. So basically,
well,
they put their people into key positions, but the media never mentions this because the media here in the United States is controlled. And when you work for the media and you tell the truth, then, of course, you never get a job again, like Gary Webb, who eventually worked for the Sun as a Mercury, a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter, but after he told the truth about the CIA and drugs, why, he could never get a job in the media again, and eventually he committed suicide by shooting himself in the head twice to make sure he was dead. You go right ahead.
Well, Dr. Stan, I knew Gary Webb, by the way. That's a very sad story that you brought that up. But just to get back to what we were talking about, to all the people out there who have lost everything, and I know for a fact that there are people listening to this broadcast who are in tent cities because I get emails from them and text messages, the reason you're in this position is that these Satanists who run our government have caused this to happen. They deliberately crashed the economy, and their goal is to bring in a satanic fascist police state with a dictator. Now, you hear about all this trouble down in Mexico. Over 6,000 people were murdered last year in Mexico in these drug cartel wars down there. More people died in Mexico last year than died in Iraq and Afghanistan. And what they don't tell you in the mainstream media is that a lot of these murders, the bodies have satanic symbols burnt and carved into them, like triangles and pentagrams, and these people have their heads cut off and their eyes gouged out in a satanic fashion.
Isn't it interesting that they never tell us about that? They never write about it. They never write about so many of the satanic things that, for instance, this background between the son of Sam Keller. He was a part of a satanic cult. So was Charles Manson. In fact, they were both tied in, directly or indirectly, to a satanic cult called the Process Church of the Latter-day Judgment. Now, why don't we ever talk about that? Why don't we ever talk about Jeffrey McDonald, a fellow who's been in prison for 25 years for killing his wife, but he didn't kill his wife. A group of Satanists did, and the prosecutor and other people there back there knew that, and they sent an innocent man to prison to cover up for the satanic crimes. And we see all sorts of strange crimes that they never can get around to solving. Oh, and because somebody very powerful intervenes and prevents the police from doing their job. We have these covens all across America, but their people are in very powerful positions and many times do everything they can to prevent the public from realizing what's going on. But you pick up the story, William.
Well, Dr. Stan, what you said is absolutely true. The mainstream media usually puts the satanic elements of the story on the back burner of reporting. You can usually find them on the Internet, but generally speaking, they're not emphasized at like CNN and, you know, C-SPAN and all these things. But if you do a little bit of hunting, the satanic aspects often pop up. Now, an interesting coven over in Italy, you know, you were talking about these satanic covens. A young woman named Amanda Knox, who's a 21-year-old American, she is on trial now for the murder of her roommate, Meredith Kircher, who was an English woman. They were both exchange students in Padua, Italy, at a university. And what happened there is that Amanda Knox had a boyfriend named Raffaele and another friend named Rudy Guida, who were part of this satanic cult. Now, 2 days before Halloween 2007, Rudy Guida put a film of himself on YouTube saying that he was a vampire and wanted to drink someone's blood. Now, what happened after that? Meredith Kircher, for Halloween, dressed up as a vampire and went to several parties. And she got into a drug-fueled stupor on alcohol and drugs, as did Amanda Knox and Rudy and Raffaele. Now, what happened the next day is that Amanda Knox and Rudy and Raffaele were standing outside their house. Meredith Kircher was a roommate of Knox. And what happened is a guy came by and accidentally bumped into one of their barrels, and Amanda Knox waved a big knife at him and threatened him, and the guy drove away. Now, the next day, Meredith Kircher's body was found all sliced up. She had her throat slit in a ritual fashion in her bedroom, and there were blood stains on the wall, and someone, it looks very much like they wrote 666 in her blood. Now, what happened from there? Rudy Guida fled to Germany, but he was captured and arrested, and he was eventually tried. He's doing 30 years in prison right now for murdering Meredith Kircher. And Amanda Knox and her boyfriend, Raffaele, are now on trial in Italy, having their trial. They pled innocent and went for delays and a longer trial. But even in that case, the judge threw out a lot of the satanic evidence against Amanda Knox. They also, in Raffaele's bedroom, they found one of these Magna comics from Japan, which was a vampire graphic novel, that shows a vampire murdering a young sexy girl, and in this one particular comic, the body is positioned exactly as they found Meredith Kircher in her room, and in the comic book it also had blood all over the wall. So they seem to have been mimicking this ritual they saw in this graphic novel. Now, right now, Amanda Knox has changed her story three times. First, she said she was innocent. Then she said she was there, and she tried to frame this man who ran a nightclub. This poor man got arrested and held for 4 days till they checked out his alibi. Amanda Knox said he and her murdered Meredith. And then she changed her story again and said she was completely innocent and was over Raffaele's house the night of the murder. So this is, I mentioned this because it was in the news today. And it, when they covered this morning on Good Morning America, they did not mention any of the satanic elements. They just called it a sex-fueled party gone wrong, but it wasn't. It was a satanic sacrifice. I mean, the evidence is so clear. Rudy Guida, as I said, posted on YouTube a few days before he did this saying he wanted to murder someone in a vampire act. And as I say, I think Amanda Knox is going to be sent to prison for probably 30 years. That's the maximum sentence you can get in Italy. But their legal system is very different over there, and trials drag out a long time. But I don't think Amanda Knox will ever go free, but the satanic nature of her crime will never be emphasized anywhere in the mainstream media. You have to come to shows like this to hear the satanic details.
Well, you know, I think one of the more interesting things you brought up the last time we had a program, William, was the story of Columbine. We know that they intentionally are covering up Columbine. A lot of the records are sealed. Why are they sealing the records of Columbine? Well, because both Klebold and Harris were into Satanism and Luciferianism. But the interesting thing is why they tracked down Kathy Burnell and asked her if she was a Christian, and then they killed her. And, of course, we've heard a lot about that story. But what's the real story about Kathy, and why did they want to kill Kathy specifically?
Oh, it's Cassie Burnell, not Kathy. It's just a mispronunciation.
Is Cassie or Kathy?
K-A-S-S-I-E, Cassie.
Cassie, okay. Why did they want to kill Cassie specifically?
Well, Cassie Burnell and Rachel Scott were two girls who went to Columbine High School who were born-again Christians. They belonged to an evangelical Bible study group. Now, some of the basement tapes that Eric Harris and Klebold made, which haven't been released to the public yet, some of them have been leaked. And they talk about killing Christians and killing Rachel in particular. They mention Rachel's name. Now, Cassie Burnell is a really strange case because she was a member of a satanic coven. And what had happened was she was involved with this group and she was taking drugs, and her mother discovered a note amongst her schoolwork from a girlfriend of hers who was also in the coven, and they were describing these rituals. Now, what Cassie Burnell's parents did was they called their pastor and gave her some pastoral counseling, and she left the satanic cult, and she went away to an evangelical summer camp, and a big change came over her there. I suspect she was sexually abused by this cult and came to terms with it at the evangelical summer camp with the counselors there. But she was a very changed woman. She left the cult altogether and started doing very well in high school. The problem is the cult didn't want to let her go. They started harassing her, making phone calls to her house, and even throwing rocks at her house and trying to cajole her. So her parents moved. They were so harassed by this cult that they were forced to move. They wrote about this in a book called She Said Yes. And what happened to Cassie was that on the day Eric Harris and Klebold, April 20th, 1999, they found Cassie under a table. She was with her friend Beata, and Eric Harris.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Go right ahead.
Eric Harris saw Cassie Bernal and pulled her out, and Cassie Bernal screamed for her life. She says, "Don't kill me. I just want to go home."
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
Men, they were looking for her. They pulled her out. They asked her, said, you know, deny Christ. Something to the effect, Harris said, you know, I'm your God now, and pointing a gun at her, and she said, no, you're not. No, you're not. And then he shot her. But you see, they don't want the American people to understand the true spiritual nature of the battle we're involved in today. So they just suppress this information. And I would simply ask you, ladies and gentlemen, why do you think that here we are, how many years after Columbine, and they're still keeping a lot of the information secret? In fact, they wanted to destroy it all. The last thing they want is for you out there in the audience to understand we're involved in a spiritual battle for the survival of Christian civilization and for the souls of men and women. And the battle is going on, and the average individual has no idea how pervasive this is. And of course, William's done a wonderful job getting the information together on the Bohemian Grove. And here, the leaders of our country get together in their, in their robes and their hoods and they're holding their candles and their chants. And if you haven't seen the DVD that Alex Jones got, and I really believe risking his life to get it, it's well worthwhile. You actually have that up on your website, don't you, William?
Yes, Dr. Stan. They can get that at williamhkennedy.com. That's on the Satanic Crime Multimedia page. And you can watch the entire film that Alex Jones did. And it's quite amazing, Dr. Stan, because when you look at these groups, it's very bizarre, like the Bohemian Grove. They get into those robes you talked about, and they actually worship a giant owl god and perform a mock human sacrifice. They call it the cremation of care. And these are the richest and most powerful. Arnold Schwarzenegger is a member. George W. Bush was a member. Richard Nixon was a member. Ronald Reagan was a member. Art Linkletter was a member. It's just very, very bizarre that these, you know, very architects and politicians who run our country perform this very deranged ritual at the Bohemian Grove.
Well, I would say in Richard Nixon's defense that in the tapes, you know, it came out that he was very, very critical of what went on there, but of course he wanted to be rubbing shoulders with the important people. He was a little man with an inferiority complex, and of course he was very critical of a lot of the things that I think he made some remark about, you know, these people running around in the wood naked. Here, but you're actually talking about the leaders of our country. We have one of their publications, some of their books, which you're not supposed to have, but in the front of this one, the comment is on there's one page, and all it says on it, we revere the owl. We revere the owl. Well, the owl is the emblem of Moloch, a symbol of Satan. So why are they having, you know, these feigned human sacrifices in front of a reproduction of a satanic, figure? And this is what it's all about. And we have a four-tape set. We actually have that DVD on Bohemian Grove. We actually have but nobody has a four-tape set. We actually have fascinating information on it that you're not going to be able to get elsewhere. And, of course, it's available through Radio Liberty. If you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack from within by these dark, sinister spiritual forces, which nobody likes to talk about. We'll talk about right and left, conservative and liberal, Republicans and Democrats, why Republicans are good and Democrats are bad, or why Democrats are bad and are good and Republicans are bad. But so they argue back and forth, and it's all a diversion. That's one thing that they don't want people to know. The real battle is that spiritual battle that's being fought behind the scenes, which is never talked about in the media, because the media in America is controlled. Well, William, what sort of response are you getting to your message?
Very well, Dr. Stan. It's quite amazing. I get over 4,000 hits a day at my webpage, and mostly this is people coming to enjoy all the free multimedia pages. I mean, you can get, I link to documentary films on occult subjects, and a lot of people who do Christian apologetics really love it because it gives them a nice thumbnail sketch of the things they're arguing against, like Kabbalah and alchemy, Rosicrucianism, Freemasonry, spiritualism. I give very pithy films that give you a real quick overview of these subjects. They're really, really excellent. The Da Vinci Code, Knights Templar, all these sorts of things, some of the occult ESP stuff, you know, so you can get yourself a mini education at williamhkennedy.com. And
hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, you go right ahead there, William. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but the computer doesn't give us any leeway. Go ahead.
Oh, no problem, Dr. Stan. What I was just saying, that at williamhkennedy.com, there's all sorts of free films and material. I even put up a survivalist webpage, which has great information for coping with the economic meltdown, like how to deal with credit agents and mortgage brokers and debt management, some really practical and straightforward information. Now, I highly recommend to people out there that they get themselves a year's supply of food and a year's supply of nutritional supplements to store. Now, you can get a lot of good vitamins at RadioLiberty.com, your page, Dr. Stan. And I'll say Dr. Stan's vitamins that he sells and nutritional supplements are excellent because he personally checked them for how well they absorb into your body. And a lot of this stuff you get at your chain store drug stores, you know, don't even dissolve in your stomach. But the stuff at Dr. Stan's site is the best place for you to get a year's supply of supplements. And as I say, get stuff you like to eat as well as some of these survivalist foods. Get a mix of things. But certainly have yourself a year's supply in reserve, because the way these Satanists are running our government, you're going to see all sorts of terrible shortages and power outages. So it's best to prepare yourselves. And if you don't prepare, you'll be suffering very horribly very soon, I'm afraid to say. But check out those supplements at RadioLiberty.com. And look at the free material I have up at WilliamHKennedy.com. Now, Dr. Stan, on a personal level, things are going very well for me. I just was hired by a Canadian production company, and this summer we're going to be shooting a series on satanic murders, and I'm going to be covering the Ricky Casso case, which was a case in 1984 in Long Island, New York. Ricky Casso murdered his best friend in a satanic ceremony, and the last thing he said to his best friend, Gary Lowers, as he murdered him was, "Say you love Satan." Now, here's another case where the satanic aspects of the crime were put on the back burner, and they tried to say that this was just a drug-fueled murder, as they did in the Amanda Knox case. Well, one thing you got to remember, Dr. Stan, most of the violent crimes that occur in the world are drug and alcohol related. If you go to a prison and you talk to the people there, most of them, no matter what their crime was, be it bank robbery or
hugging. Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William, you were just saying that, you know, Sydney, if you go to prisons and you talk to the people who have been involved in these terrible, terrible crimes, what do they tell you?
Oh, drugs and alcohol were big motivators behind what they did, despite the crime, be it rape or murder or robbery or breaking and entry. And that's true of satanic crimes as well. A lot of these satanic serial killers, like Richard Ramirez and Ricky Casso, who I'll be covering in that documentary, performed a lot of their crimes while they were high on drugs. But as I say, you can't just blame the drugs, because drugs are responsible for every sort of crime out there. So that's always seems to be there, whatever the crime. So you can't write Satanism off to drug-fueled craziness, because there are certainly a lot of people who take drugs who don't go do any crimes. But when you mix drugs and Satanism, the crimes become particularly vicious. And Dr. Stan, the one thing that has shocked me in all my research about satanic serial killers like Richard Ramirez is that they sincerely believe that Lucifer will protect them from criminal prosecution. That's how crazy and delusional they become. And even Ricky Casso, his faith in the fallen angel was so deep that after he murdered Gary Lowers, he started taking other teenagers. For a dollar, he would take you on a tour to see Gary Lowers' body. And that's how he got caught. Someone heard that he was doing this and contacted the police. and they arrested Ricky Casso and two of his friends. And Ricky Casso wound up hanging himself in prison. He never went to trial. He killed himself before he was ever going to stay in jail for the rest of his life. But he had vowed to do that, and that was part of his Satanism, to kill himself rather than go to jail. And when he killed himself, he did so most likely because he wanted to be in hell with Lucifer.
First of all, I'm going to have you get out your website again and any contact information you'd like to. And, of course, if you are out in the listening audience, you'd like to give us a call. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-295. But well, why don't you go ahead and get your website out?
It's WilliamHKennedy.com, WilliamHKennedy.com. There's an H in the middle of it, and if you can't get me there, go to Google or Yahoo and just put in William Kennedy, and I'll be right on the first page there. And I want to emphasize that you don't have to register or buy anything. You're welcome to come to WilliamHKennedy.com and enjoy all of the free resources on occultism, satanic serial killers, witchcraft and crime, the Wicca movement. I have a really great page on that. And the big thing is I really want to get this information out there. If you want to support my work, you can buy one of my books through RadioLiberty.com, RadioLiberty.com. And but if not, I know times are tight. Please come to WilliamHKennedy.com. You'll be very, very impressed with my diabolical database I've put together there. And whatever your religious persuasion, this will give you the most accurate and complete information on the subject of occult history in the modern world. There's no other, I can sincerely say it's the best website of its type on the Internet. I know of none better for this particular series of subjects.
All right.
And I challenge anyone to show me a better one, but check it out, WilliamHKennedy.com.
Somebody that I called in wanted to know if about your proof that the Skull and Bones was involved or responsible for the economic crash. Is that information up on your website?
Yeah, it should be on in the Skull and Bones section. If it's not there now, check in another hour. I'm not sure if the guy that handles that put it up. But you can just go to Wikipedia and put in William Donaldson's name, and it will mention that he was in the Skull and Bones and that he is being investigated for the net cap rule he set up in 2004 with Henry Paulson. That's right, on Wikipedia, William Donaldson, the exact way it is spelled. And you can also find Austin Goolsbee there, G-O-O-L-S-B-E. He was a Skull and Bones member 1991, and he is now the chairman of the Economic Recovery Advisory Board for Barack Obama. This is all verifiable information that you can do right on Google. So, in fact, William Donaldson is in deep, deep trouble right now because of the net cap rule and because his chief economic advisor was Bernard Madoff. So, this just the evidence I'm giving there right now, and you can verify this right on the net, it's pretty compelling what I'm saying, and it's incontrovertible, and you'll see William Donaldson up before Congress very, very soon, but they won't mention he's a Skull and Bonesman.
No, I'm sure they won't. They don't identify the people from the subversive groups, and certainly the Skull and Bones is subversive, the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers. These are all subversive groups because they want to subvert our system, circumvent our Constitution, which many of them have sworn to uphold, and bring in this new world order, truly a satanic world order. Well, let's go to Jeannie, who's calling us from Aptos. Hi, Jeannie. How are you doing? Jeannie, are you there? Well, I don't know what happened.
This is Sandy. Did you have the name?
Oh, yeah. Sandy, would you mind holding on? Let me go to Jeannie, and then we'll get you right on.
Okay.
All right, fine. So let's go to Jeannie. Hi, Jeannie. How are you there?
Very good. I wanted to ask Mr. Kennedy. what he has knowledge of the Knights of Malta. And I'll take the answer off the air.
All right, well, thanks very much. And, of course, what about the Knights of Malta?
Well, you can find out about the Knights of Malta at williamhkennedy.com in the occult history section under the Knights Templar. The Knights of Malta were originally called the Knights Hospitallers, and they fought in the Crusades along with the Knights Templar, and eventually they evolved into a Catholic order for very rich people. The Knights of Malta still exist. The reason they're called the Knights of Malta is that was their last holding, the Isle of Malta, and Napoleon took it from them, so they were dissolved as a country. They had their own country, but they still existed on paper in the Vatican, and they still made people Knights of Malta. Now, after the Knights Templar were disbanded and by the Pope in the 1300s, a lot of former Knights Templar joined the Knights of Malta, though they weren't called that then, and it's believed they brought a lot of occult rituals into the Knights of Malta, and some very famous people were Knights of Malta. William Colby, who used to run the CIA, was a Knight of Malta. So Ronald Reagan, even though he wasn't Catholic, was still made a Knight of Malta. So it's, again, it's another one of these groups that links into these secret societies that goes back many, many centuries.
But I think that the common denominator behind all of them, Jeannie, is they all tie into this desire to bring about this world government. They all go back to the ancient mystery religions and to the fact that there is a power out there you can tap into, but if you do at the risk of your eternal soul. Anything else, Jeannie? Are you there, Jeannie? I guess we lost Jeannie, so let's go to Sandy in Yakima. Sandy, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, fine. Thank you for hanging on. Go right ahead.
Sure. Some years ago, I was watching TV, and I saw Geraldo interviewing Anton LaVey, and Anton LaVey said that Halloween is the highest satanic holiday of the year, and he said they impregnate young women and use their babies in their sacrifices, and then he went on to describe what they do to these babies. And it bothered me so bad psychologically for 2 years until God was able to relieve me of that.
Well, this
it was
is
so horrible.
We are living in a terrible, terrible time, but we have to put our reliance on the Lord and try to make people understand that there really is, and there has been for 5,000-6,000 years, a battle between God and Satan. The significant thing is it's coming to conclusion probably during our lifetime. Certainly during yours, I don't know about mine, but I really wouldn't be surprised if I'd live to see this thing come to fruition, and what a wonderful time to know the Lord. Anything else, Sandy, you'd like to say?
I want to say one more thing. Ever since then, I cannot, as a Christian, celebrate Halloween in any way, shape, or form, and so I'm kind of alone hanging in here, believing that way, because even the churches have their little celebrations on Halloween, and to me, personally, I cannot celebrate it in any way.
You're absolutely right, and no Christian should be celebrating Halloween.
That's right. I mean, even
this
if it's
is
a celebration,
of the
it's
high
still on the same night,
right,
associated with that night.
All right, I agree with you totally. God bless. Thanks very much, Sandy. And help
Thank
us
you.
Get the word out. And let's go.
I
to,
will.
Let's go to Ruby is calling from Live Oak. Hi, Ruby.
Hi, Dr. Stan. I'd like to ask Mr. Kennedy if he might comment on the popularity of the Harry Potter series. A lot of people think, oh, it's so innocuous. I personally do not.
Oh, I think Harry Potter is very dangerous, and people should keep their children away from the films and the book. What particularly disturbed me about the Harry Potter material is that they were selling magic kits, Harry Potter magic kits, and they had a little cauldron and a magic wand, and they had kids mix candy in this cauldron and do little spells. Well, that's occultism, and that's practicing something that's non-Christian. And for people who are atheists, it's also a very obsessive thing, especially when they throw all that sugar in the magical mix there. So it just sends your kids in a bad direction. Now, if you want to show young people something very good and constructive, they made a series of films out of the C.S. Lewis Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and Prince Caspian just came out. It has a Christian message, but technical effects are just as good as Harry Potter or any of these other things. So if you want a safe alternative to Harry Potter, go with the Chronicle of Narnia books and films by C.S. Lewis.
Okay, fine. Thanks very much, Ruby. And let's go to Paul, who's calling from Oklahoma. Hi, Paul. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
And let me put our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And our guest is William H. Kennedy. But go ahead, Paul.
Thank you. This is a good show. You just mentioned that there's a battle between God and Satan.
Absolutely. That's what this is really all about, and there really are people who follow Satan and follow Lucifer. And if you doubt that, if you have a search engine, just put that in.
There is no battle between God and Satan.
Oh, there isn't.
Because Satan was created by God.
I see. Well, I believe that you may not believe
being.
A battle, but I believe there is, so we'll disagree on that. But go ahead.
If you read the Job's supposed to be recognized as the oldest book of the Bible. And if you read in there...
Now what's the oldest book in the Bible?
Second chapter of Job. Satan comes to God and gives account to him, telling him what he's doing.
Okay, fine.
See, he's a created being by God.
Okay.
He's created evil.
All right,
fine. So there's no battle between God and...
Then maybe the God you worship is responsible for the atrocities that Adolf Hitler created, or that the Mao Tse-tung, did your God do those things?
No, he's not responsible for that. Those people that did those things are responsible for that.
Well, what motivated
Satan him? Satan is evil, but my point is that he's created evil by God.
There's no
battle between God and Satan,
right,
because...
Fine.
He was created by him.
All right, thank you so
he
much. Thank you so much for your call, Paul. Bye-bye. Now let's go to Mike Cawley from Santa Cruz. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, Revelation chapter 19 talks about Jesus coming back with an army, so I suppose there's a battle going on.
Well, some people, that's perfectly all right. People have a right to their opinion. I believe there is a battle between good and evil. I believe that God allows evil. But of course, these things go on, and there is a conflict going on today for the souls of men. And unfortunately, we're losing that battle because, of course, most people don't even know that there is a battle going on. But go ahead, Mike.
I found it so curious this week. Gary Trudeau, in his Doonesbury comic strip, has this for several days now, discourse on Skull and Bones and the theft of Geronimo's skull. These things actually come up from time to time. He does strips that are very revealing about the life of the Bushes and Yale in this regard. And so it's concurrent. What Trudeau is doing is concurrent with this case in court where Geronimo's tribe, I forget if it was Apache or what, but there's all this time, it's been, 100 years now, they've been trying to get the skull back, and they still can't.
Yeah, the skull of Geronimo, which Prescott Bush, George W. Bush's grandfather, stole from Geronimo's grave and took it back to the Skull and Bones Temple, which is on the campus of Yale University, and they technically own the campus of Yale University under the Russell Trust, and they rent it to Yale for $1 a year. But that's true. They have the skull of Geronimo, and they also have several other skulls in there of a prominent people. We're not sure which ones, but they're used as power totems in Satanism. So they are trying to actually absorb the political power of Geronimo. Now, Geronimo's descendants, his great-great-great-grandson, has petitioned the courts to have the Skull and Bones Society return Geronimo's skull to the Apaches so they can rebury it on their traditional tribal lands. Now, that's a very bizarre slant to the story of the Skull and Bones, but they have all sorts of diabolical things there. They even have a set of silverware that was owned by Adolf Hitler, which was bought back from a soldier who was a Skull and Bonesman after World War II.
Oh, anything else, Mike?
Yeah. Your guest was talking about April 20th, 1999. April 20th is a very significant date in Satanism. It's the beginning of the 10-day period of preparation for Walpurgisnacht, which is the last night in April.
Very true. It's also Adolf Hitler's birthday.
Yeah, and there's usually a requirement of blood sacrifice along the way there.
That's true. I've heard that before.
Yeah, so...
All right, Mike, God bless.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks very much for calling. And, of course, ladies and gentlemen, there really is this struggle going on out there. God eventually will be victorious, but we're in for a difficult time. We'll be right back. Well, William, we've got 3 minutes to wrap up our program for this first hour.
Okay, Dr. Stan, I just want to conclude by saying that people must educate themselves.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
With food prices soaring to all-time highs, as the dollar continues to fall in value, what can you and your family do to guarantee that fresh, nutritious vegetables will make it to your dinner table? Garden in a Can. Garden in a Can is your source for premium, long-term storable seeds. Garden in a Can is ready when you are. Plant them now or store them for when you really need them. There are 16 large, hermetically sealed, non-hybrid, open-pollinated packets of seeds, along with detailed planting instructions sealed in a can for ultimate long-term protection. Garden in a Can. It's that simple. Fresh, healthy, easy. Only $69.95 for over a half acre of safe, fresh vegetables. Ready when you are. Stop procrastinating and start preparing with Garden in a Can. For more details, visit GardenInACan.com today. That's GardenInACan.com or call 866-598-7396, 866-598-7396.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
On satanic crimes. This is not imaginary. It's really very, very real. And much of the violence that's gone on in the past has been related to these people who've given themselves to the dark side. And I really fear that in the coming months we're going to see that increasing tempo of violence that is actually going to be promoted by the people in key positions of power. And if you haven't read Henry Kissinger's January 12th, 2009, article in the International Herald Tribune titled A Chance for a New World Order. He tells you we have two alternatives. It's either the new international order or chaos. And you can be sure these wicked people that Henry Kissinger represents will bring about chaos, unfortunately. So we're really in a transitional period. I hate to say this, but the wonderful America that I grew up in doesn't exist anymore. And certainly this depression is not going to end for, you know, next year or the year after that. It's going to be around for a long period of time. And this whole scam is carefully engineered to bring about the New World Order and the New World Economic System and the New World Currency. And the destruction of Christianity, this is what they want. I don't think they'll ever destroy Christianity. But, of course, they want a new world religion, and they want to enthrone the world leader. Now, to really put things into this perspective, let me suggest the four-tape set on the Bohemian Grove, the four-tape set on the Bilderbergers. We have a DVD on the Bilderbergers, which is one of the most powerful groups in the world. We have that DVD is called The End Game by Alex Jones. We have two books on the Bilderbergers. We have a four-tape set on the Bohemian Grove. We have a four-tape set on Skull and Bones. We have a book on Skull and Bones written by a woman, a Yale graduate, who actually had studied Skull and Bones and talked to the people there. And then, of course, we do hope that you'll want to get the DVDs on the Secret Mystery set, The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning, Riddles in Stone, and the latest one, which I really recommend to you, The Eye of the Phoenix. And it goes into the background of the emblems on the back of the dollar bill that were put there by President Roosevelt, who was a Mason and involved in Satanism. And it was for that reason that he began to pack the Supreme Court with people who would take God and prayer out of our schools. And he was followed by another Mason, by Harry Truman. And, of course, they wanted to destroy the Christian foundation of this country, but you couldn't tell the Christians that. The Eye of the Phoenix, we recommend to you. And then, of course, if you haven't laid in a supply of foods, you really need to do it. And if you have a catalog, don't put it off. My wife just put her order in here this last week. We've ordered before, but we wanted to have some more food on hand because we think we may be moving into very, very difficult times. And then, of course, we do hope that you perhaps want to lay in Berkey water filters. We do carry those. And if you already have the filters, get an extra set of the filters. You want to have them on hand. If you'd like to get the health products, I will tell you that the ones we have, they're an RL for Radio Liberty label, but they're put out by a Christian organization, certainly one of the largest Christian manufacturers of health products, and lay in a supply of alibiotic and high-dose vitamin D, because this, of course, will get your immune system working much more efficiently. At least I believe it will. So understand that you're going to have to begin making preparation for yourself, because I believe we're going to begin to see the breakdown of the structure of society. And I think we're going to see a lot more violence and chaos and increasingly exactly as they plan. And after all, Henry Kissinger tells us, it's either the new international order or chaos. Get that article off the Internet. If you can't get it, you get something else from us, ask for a copy. We'll get it for you. We're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Please pray for America. Pray for revival, because if we don't have a revival, we're going to lose this country. And then please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Greater Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you listen to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of one of our favorite guests, and that's William Grigg. William, are you there?
I am here. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Are you over your cold?
Yes, I am, with the help of those wonderful herbal remedies that you insist on sending me. I really appreciate your generosity.
Well, that's my wife. She just wants to keep you in good health because you've got an awful lot to look after those six children. But anyway, what are we going to talk about today?
We have to talk about the Great Unraveling. That's going to be the conversation we're going to be having, I think, for the foreseeable future. And I certainly wish that more people were having serious conversations about it and addressing it intelligently. Just in the last couple of days, we've seen sort of a dead parrot rally on Wall Street. And I use that expression with reference to the classic Monty Python sketch in which a man walks into a pet store with a cage in which he has a dead parrot. He just bought the parrot a couple of hours earlier, and he'd been assured that the parrot was not dead but sleeping. And he took the parrot home, and lo and behold, of course, the parrot had shuffled off its mortal coil. It was now an unparrot. But he cannot convince the person who has sold him that parrot that the parrot is indeed non compos mentis. The salesman keeps insisting that he's just resting, that he's simply taking a nap, that perhaps he's demoralized. At one point, while the owner of this dead bird is distracted, the pet shop owner shakes the cage so as to make the parrot twitch and says, "See, he just moved." Well, what we're seeing over the last couple of days is that somebody is shaking the cage and making the parrot twitch. That's what's happening on Wall Street. We're having a dead parrot rally. And in the midst of this artificially induced euphoria over the fact that the market has rallied back up from 1966 levels when adjusted for inflation to something akin to 1983 levels, we're hearing the Obama administration now talking about how people have overestimated the depth and severity of the economic contraction, and that perhaps they've already done enough to lend their healing touch to the economy, and that we actually might see something akin to a recovery this year. And this puts me in the mind of what Pat Robertson said. We, I think, discussed this a few weeks ago, Dr. Stan, how Pat Robertson, toward the end of the year, when he was talking to his employees, said that during his meditations at the end of last year, when he was seeking the mind of God on a number of things, that he had received divine assurance that the so-called stimulus package would work, that Obama's Keynesian remedy for the economy would turn things around, we'd have a very brief recession, and that good times were on the way for everybody but those who were irrationally embittered political enemies of Mr. Obama. Well, of course, none of this is true. I don't know what it was that impressed this idea upon Pat Robertson's mind. I do know that in the last couple of days you've seen this almost, and I hate to use the expression in a flighty or trivial sense, but this almost manic depressive polarity shift happened in the media, where at the beginning of the week we were told by the authoritative voice of none other than Paul Krugman of the New York Times that Mr. Obama's stimulus package was way too small, that it was a bandage much too small to cover the gaping and hemorrhaging injury, and that we needed to do something much larger. And now at the end of the week we're being told that lo and behold, that tiny remedy has worked its miracles and we're headed for better times. Neither of these analyses is correct because both of them ignore reality.
Well, I think, of course, what people have to understand is there's something called the Working Group on Financial Markets. The Working Group on Financial Markets, you can check it out on the Internet, and this is the team that manipulates the stock market. And when they want to make us feel good, the market goes up. When they want to make us feel bad, the market goes down. And until you realize that you're being manipulated, you're not going to understand why one day you feel good, and the next day, reason why you're in depression. Well, go right ahead.
Yeah, that working group, of course, is also known colloquially as the Pledge Protection Team. And they have been at work for I think roughly 20 years now, there was an embryonic version of them assembled after the 1987 stock market crash. And it really got a huge infusion of both resources and establishment credibility, the establishment substitute for credibility, about 11 years ago. But the plants protection team has been working overtime. They simply had to do something about putting a new floor beneath the market because it looked as if the collapse, and we're seeing a full-orbed collapse of the market. This is something that's not going to stop. But it seems as if the collapse had happened all at once. And what they're doing, I think, is trying to arrange some kind of a decent, orderly retreat where it will go down, it will go back up occasionally, but it will be going down in plateaus. There's going to be a certain staggering quality as it goes down to its natural level, which I suspect is somewhere probably in the vicinity of having a 4 in the front of the four-digit number, or perhaps even a 3. I don't know for sure, but I think it's natural bottom somewhere in the 4,000 range or maybe a little lower. But the point is, as you say, Dr. Stitt, this is something which is done by way of deliberate manipulation. This is not the market rallying to good news regarding consumer spending or good news regarding productivity, because there is no legitimate good news on either of those fronts. Just over the last week, and this is something that has gotten nowhere near enough attention, of course, this dead parrot twitch in the market, this dead parrot bounce, it was designed to take this kind of stuff off of the headlines. But some of the so-called mainstream news sources started to talk about the research done by John Williams at Shadow Statistics, shadowstats.com, regarding the way that the unemployment figures have been massaged. At the beginning of the week, we heard that the unemployment numbers were becoming perilously close to 10%, that they're up above 9%. And Mr. Williams was interviewed by a couple of news sources, and he pointed out that if we were still using the metrics which had been used during the Carter administration, we'd be looking at an unemployment rate at least 17% or higher. And, of course, this is very early in this recession. And the fact that we would be at that level of unemployment this early in what is going to be a multi-year contraction would be enough to terrify anybody. And I think that's probably the chief piece of news that was meant to be eclipsed by this engineered market rally. And I think as well we need to revisit what Paul Krugman was saying. But earlier this week he was saying that the so-called Keynesian stimulus that was being imparted by this huge pork-laden and perquisite...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Chris Wooden was just talking about the plunge protection team of the Working Group on Financial Markets and how they really are at work manipulating the stock market. Now, most people, you know, look at the stock market and think, oh my goodness, you know, it's those good figures that came out. Citigroup, had a couple of months as they were making money. That's why the market went up. No, ladies and gentlemen, that's what they tell you. The truth of the matter is it's all manipulated by the Working Group on Financial Markets. It's been around since 1987, and then William, of course, is talking about Paul Krugman, this so-called Nobel Peace Prize winning economist who writes for the New York Times, and he claims that, oh my goodness, what we need to do is spend more money, that the initial stimulus bill, the $787 billion stimulus bill just wasn't enough money. They're going to have to put out, you know, a lot more money to get this problem solved. The problem is that the problem came about because they were spending too much of this phony money. There's nothing behind it. It's all imaginary. It's all created out of thin air. And are we going to solve the problem of an economy that was over-ballooned because, of course, we created money out of thin air by creating more money out of thin air? It's like fighting a fire with gasoline. Do you really think it's going to work? Go right ahead, William.
Of course, they, at some level, must know that it's not going to work because they're intelligent enough to appreciate the inevitable lessons of economic history. But for the purposes of the play-acting that is part of this deception, they have to profess to believe certain things. They have to profess to believe that the way that you get out of a hole is to dig that hole more deeply. But with respect to what Paul Krugman was saying, he really puts this argument over the so-called stimulus package into a really interesting light and puts defenders of the stimulus package in a really interesting position. If this so-called stimulus is not large enough to be effective, why are people condemning those handful of Republican governors who, for whatever reason, have decided they don't want to receive the so-called stimulus funding from Washington? The governor of South Carolina, Mark Sanford, is chief of that PAC. Bobby Jindal of Louisiana said he's not going to accept some of it. Rick Perry of Texas has said that some of it he would not be interested in receiving. Haley Barbour of Mississippi. Each of them have said that they might reject some of the funds. Butch Otter, the governor of my home state of Idaho, made some noises to that effect, but he has talked himself out of taking a principled stand on this issue. Governor Sanford of South Carolina has been the most thoroughgoing in his rejection of this. And, of course, everybody has been inveighing against Governor Sanford and these other Republican governors, saying that they're putting their political loyalties above the needs of their states, that they're being somehow un-American, unpatriotic for not helping the president heal the economy. Well, if really the chief defender of the Keynesian approach, Paul Krugman, the Nobel Prize-winning economist in the New York Times, says that the so-called stimulus package is too small to work, then why are you going to be beating upon people for not taking a portion of a package that's insufficient, that's inadequate for the purposes that are being advertised? And the answer is, of course, that this has nothing to do with economic recovery. The so-called stimulus package is simply another large increment of public boodle that's being slopped in the trough of a particular group of constituencies, those who are attached to the Democratic Party. If the Republicans were still in power, you'd have the same policy being pursued, probably in similar, almost identical amounts. You'd have a slightly different constellation of tax-fed constituencies, but that's the only material difference between the so-called stimulus that's being pursued by Obama and the so-called stimulus that was being pursued by Bush a year ago. And the thing I find interesting as well about this conversation in South Carolina is that Governor Sanford had the presence of mind to speak some uncomfortable and unwelcome truths about the likelihood of our economy going the way of Zimbabwe. I'm paraphrasing now. Actually, I'm going to be quoting from a piece that was in the Wire Services, the Associated Press, today. Sanford on Thursday made a comment at a news conference in South Carolina likening Obama's economic stimulus efforts to the hyperinflationary economy in Zimbabwe, one of Africa's most corrupt governments. And that provoked a comment from Representative James Clyburn of South Carolina, who's the third highest-ranking Democrat. Mr. Clyburn said the following: "What took the man to Zimbabwe? Someone should ask him if that's really the best comparison. How can he compare this country's situation to Zimbabwe?" Now, I'm going to give Mr. Clyburn the benefit of the doubt here and assume that he is as ignorant as that comment would suggest, rather than he is as dishonest as he would have to be in order to say that there is no comparison. The obvious comparison, of course, has to do with printing press money and the inflationary impact of unrestrained government spending, deficit spending, where the government has to conjure through a central bank the so-called money out of nothing in order to fund its activities. That's how he got to Zimbabwe. The largest and most conspicuous practitioner of hyperinflation in the world today, that is to say in terms of the effects on the economy, the biggest practitioner of inflation, of course, is the government of the United States and the Federal Reserve and its minions and mouthpieces in the banking industry, the fractional reserve banking system. These are the chief practitioners of the vice for which Zimbabwe has now become infamous, because they're living with the consequences of hyperinflation. And we're living really in that interval, I believe, as I've said before, that interval that separates the outgoing phase of a tsunami from the reciprocal wave that wipes everything out. The tsunami, of course, in this case being created by the outgoing rush of inflated dollars and the incoming rush of price inflation as the dollars make the circuit. You simply cannot create something on the order of anywhere from $3 to $8 trillion. Nobody really knows how much over the course of a quarter in a given year, and expect that you're going to be immune to the impact. And just today, the premier of China, if I'm not mistaken, started talking in very worried tones about the health of America's fiscal status, and wondering if perhaps the United States government was going to start inflating its way out of the obligations, the debt obligations that it has with Beijing, Beijing being right now, I believe, our largest creditor, is Beijing or Tokyo, and Riyadh, that is to say, our good friends in Saudi Arabia, such wonderful, cultivated people, the Saudis, they're the people who have been propping up the public debt of the federal government. And so now you have the Chinese talking about the possibility that they're going to have to find some kind of security for the loans that they have made to us. And when they start talking in terms like that, it really starts to get really interesting, because what kind of security would the Chinese be looking for? Well, you want something that has tangible value. If you're sitting on a huge pile of depreciating dollars that are likely to go south in terms of their subjective value, you want something of value. And so I don't doubt for a second that the Chinese are casting a somewhat hungry and eager eye on a number of very prized assets here in the United States as potential security for these loans. And the big question becomes then, what would the Obama administration be willing to put up as collateral? And so that's the situation we're in right now. If the Chinese decide to dump their bonds, the dollar is going to tank. The dollar is going to be tanking anyway when, at long last, the outflow of inflated dollars generates the reciprocal influx of price inflation. Any way you look at it, the dollar is headed the same direction. The U.S. dollar is headed the same direction as the Zimbabwean dollar. It's just amazing to me that any political official in this country, let alone a Republican governor like Governor Sanford of South Carolina, would have the presence of mind to talk about Zimbabwe in comparison to what the Obama administration is trying to do. And all this, of course, doesn't take into account the fact that we still have these two wars going on that are going to be escalating. We're supposedly de-escalating in Iraq. I don't think that's true, but we're definitely going to be seeing an escalation in Afghanistan. You have the open-ended expense of two wars, neither of which is anywhere near completion, if by completion you mean restoration of some kind of stability to the countries that are being occupied. And the Obama administration now is talking about expanding its military involvement with Pakistan, which is a nuclear-armed country, a nuclear-Muslim country. It's a very uninviting prospect. And then it has been said by people who are in a position to know that the Israelis still intend to conduct some kind of military strike against Iran so as to precipitate a purported nuclear weapons program that the intelligence organs of this country believe is not on a track to produce a nuclear weapon for Tehran, but that the Israelis insist is on a track to produce an Iranian nuclear weapon. And the Israelis, if they attack Iran, will be precipitating a regional war that would have immediate and very damaging impacts upon the global economy and the American economy in particular. You're talking a price shock in the terms of a risk premium being built into petroleum exports that in and of itself would be sufficient to drive the world into depression, assuming that we're not already there right now. So any way you run the math, it makes perfect sense to be talking about Zimbabwe as a potential model or a potential analog for what we're seeing here in terms of the economy. It doesn't require a gift for doomsaying or an ability to find the dark cloud within every silver lining. It's just a rational assessment of what's happening right now. And the only weapon in their toolkit, or the only tool in their toolkit, or weapon in their arsenal, as you like to say, Dr. Stan, is deception. All they can do is keep maintaining the pretense that these people are in control, or at least they have some rational purchase on a solution for this problem. And I don't think they're seeking solutions. I think they're seeking a crisis that can be exploited to their own ends.
And I think that really is what's so important. They are not really seeking a solution. Well, this stimulus bill is not going to solve the problem. This massive spending bill they've come up with is not going to solve the problem. The TALF solution, which is going to be buying up these troubled assets. And then of course, we have the so-called housing, what they're going to come up with. It's not going to solve the problem of housing. They're not approaching it from the right point of view at all. Indeed, there may be no solution other than to allow things to just collapse and then rebuild from there. We'll be back in just a moment. Go right ahead, William.
you know, Dr. Stan, when we talk about the fact that a depression is not really the problem, that the depression is the solution, a lot of people are inclined to look at us with terrified, speechless incredulity, as if we were completely foreign to reasoning as most people understand it, as if we were strangers in the house of reason. but the point is, if you understand how an economy is manipulated by a central bank that is able to generate fiat money, if you understand the fundamental mechanics of how inflation really occurs, that it's the adulteration of the currency by a central bank that can produce inflated currency on demand for political purposes and to enrich a certain clique, then you understand how booms are created, and you understand that the boom always leads to a bust. That's because you end up with people making bad calculations, they get their time preferences all mixed up, and they make bad investments based on assumptions that simply don't play out over time. And as a result, you have all these accumulated errors that have to be corrected, and that's why they, in classic economic terms, Austrian economic terms, what you have is a correction. The correction is painful. It is not pleasant at all. It's much worse than a root canal. It's the sort of thing that really hurts for a couple of years, and if it's allowed to proceed, then the errors are cleaned up, the malinvestments are taken care of, the bad allocations of funding and credit are addressed, creditors make arrangements with debtors so as to limit the losses and liquidate all the bad loans and liquidate all the overbuilt, badly structured investments that have been made. And when that happens, of course, after a couple of years, then the economy begins to heal itself. The economy has a wonderful heuristic capacity, that is to say, self-correcting or self-healing capacity, when it's permitted to function. When it's not permitted to function, things are drawn out even more painfully, and the result is you get all the bad stuff that happens in the Depression anyway, plus you have to deal with an even longer time frame for recovery, and that has the effect, really, of grinding down the basic, not only the basic industrial capacity of a country, but the very creative capacity of a population. If you have a depression that lasts for 5, 10, 15, 17, 20 years or longer, you're basically destroying an entire generation's ability to make economic progress, which is a horrible crime. I mean, that is a literal crime against humanity. Japan is in that condition right now. They're doing, in Japan, they've been doing exactly the same kind of thing that the government here in the United States is trying to do, which is to say, rather than allowing depression to ensue and wipe out these clusters of errors through the type of creative destruction, that's not an oxymoron, the type of creative destruction that a free market will always bring to bear on problems of this sort, rather than allowing that to take place, they've been propping up these bad and badly performing entities, all these so-called zombie banks that are dead except for the infusions of money from the government, and all these other financial houses that are being kept alive on government welfare and at the expense of the productive people in that country. And they've been in an economic downturn or correction or depression for almost 20 years now in Japan. Think of where they could be right now if that weren't the case. Think of where we could be if we were more economically rational. And in trying to explain this logic to friends, I've always said, well, take a look at it this way. If you're aboard an airplane...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. We'll take
right.
that flight in a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Chris William is explaining to us, using an analogy of being in an airplane,
yeah.
To go right ahead.
Yeah, if you're in an airplane that's going to have a hard landing, which prefers that it be, say, 15 feet off the ground or 15,000 feet off the ground, and what's happening is that the people who are in charge of the airplane, the economy in this case being the airplane, are doing their level best to keep bringing the plane up to a higher altitude so as to make the crash that much more traumatic. And the thing that I find really unsettling right now about what's going on in the economy is that a lot of people, that is to say people who actually have to work for a living, not the financial interests who are tied through Wall Street to the ruling elite or the political elite that rules us, a lot of people are doing the right thing. That is to say, rather than going out and spending money that they don't have or going out and getting further into debt, which is the worst thing you can do in an economy like this, people are saving. They're economizing. They're forgoing a lot of the consumer amenities that they'd otherwise go out and purchase. They're not going out and buying new cars. They're not going out and buying new electronics. They're not going out and spending money on expensive meals, dining out, things of that sort. They're behaving exactly as rational people should. That's an instinctive reaction of an intelligent human being to an economic environment of this sort. But what we're hearing from the likes of Paul Krugman, from Tim Geithner over at Treasury, and of course from Obama himself, is that you're somehow unpatriotic if you're not spending money that you can't afford to spend. We're entering a realm, and that's the same logic, by the way, that logic in this instance being a word tortured into applying to a situation that is not logical. That's the same supposed logic of the critics of Governor Sanford in South Carolina. How dare you not take this money? How dare you not join this this parade of panhandlers receiving taxpayer funds from Washington? You know, what a terrible, uncharitable, uncompassionate thing to do. How can you possibly be so heartless as to turn down these so-called stimulus funds? And what we're being told now is that we have a patriotic obligation to go out and spend. Paul Krugman, who is probably as consistently wrong about economics as any other human being who's ever drawn breath and uttered an opinion on the subject, was quoted on one of these cable shows addressing what he calls the paradox of thrift and how really savings is the worst thing that ever happened to this economy, that we had, to use one of Greenspan's favorite expressions, we had a situation where there was the Asians were saving too much money, and that created dislocations in the global credit environment. And so we're having the same kind of thing happen right now, where people are saving too much money when they should be spending in order to generate the aggregate demand that will get the consumer economy going again. And Obama himself, just recently, and by that I mean within the last few days, gave the most remarkable interview in which he said Americans shouldn't be hiding their money in mattresses. He actually used that expression. I'm thinking that's exactly what people should be doing. they should be taking their money out of the banks all being insolvent. I mean, granted, you have to have money in the bank in order to conduct your typical daily transactions right now. I just paid bills today for this month. I'd have a hard time doing that without a checking account of some kind. But beyond the minimum you need in order to carry out functions of that sort, if you have the ability to do so, it's a good idea to have cash on hand for a 1 month or several months worth of necessity, so you can pay cash for these things if you have to, because we really have no idea how much longer the banking system is going to remain body and soul together, because the fiat banking system, the fiat currency and the fractional reserve banking system is fundamentally fraudulent, and the fiat banks are all fundamentally insolvent. And when we're in an environment like this, you just can't assume that the bank you're doing business with this week is going to be up and running a month or two from now. But Obama was saying Americans shouldn't be hiding money in mattresses. And apart from the fact that's not a particularly secure location, that's the sort of thing that Americans should be doing. Americans should be cashing their cash, if you will, getting it out of the hands of this system rather than being part of the system. And they should be retaining it. They should be, to use the expression that the regime is using now, hoarding their money. They have to do that in an environment of this sort. But there's this subtle but unmistakable growing message being sent out that if you're one of these people who's trying to provide for your own household and take care of your own needs responsibly, then you're not being patriotic. I think a couple of weeks ago we might have discussed the fact that one of these talking heads on CNBC, really CNBC ought to have a consumer safety warning when they're giving out economic advice, particularly when that advice is coming from Mr. Kramer, who I think is clinically deranged. But CNBC, one of their talking heads this week, said something, or a couple of weeks ago, said something to the effect that that if you're out buying gold, if you're long on gold, then you're short on the United States of America. That it's an unpatriotic thing to be buying gold and silver, buying hard currency, because you're betting that the dollar is going to collapse, and no patriot would believe that. Well, it's not a question of patriotism. I mean, our patriotism is not of the sort that dictates that we have to be wedded to a fraudulent fiat currency. But that message is being sent out, that dynamic's being injected into the debate, and when things get really nasty...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and William was just saying that they're putting out the message that you're buying in gold. You didn't have any confidence in America. And of course, we saw actually a program, it was either earlier this week or late last week, where they said, you know, people investing in gold, well, they buy it high now, and how are they going to feel when the price goes down? And as I thought, you know, I watched that, I said, this is obviously a plant article on the news, and sort of the right way the price of gold goes down, went down to, I think, 890 here somewhere, and then it bounced right back up again. The last thing they want is for people to actually put their money into gold. And if you have not yet read Alan Greenspan's article, 1966, Gold and Freedom. That's Gold and Freedom. You'll get it on the internet, Alan Greenspan, Gold and Freedom. In 1966, he explained the relationship between gold and freedom. As he says, you know, the welfare state doesn't want you to have any means of protecting your wealth. That's why they hate gold. They do not want you to be able to protect your wealth. And that's exactly what's going on today. They want to end up bankrupting the American people. Go right ahead.
Well, they've done a splendid job of it so far. And it's only going to get worse from here. But the fact that we're hearing so much talk and so much really Jacobinical rhetoric, the Jacobins being the revolutionaries in France, Jacobinical rhetoric execrating those of us who are trying to retain what we make rather than spending it, rather than seeing it destroyed through inflation, this early in the process is something that I find very worrisome, because it's only going to get worse from here. And as things get worse from here, the rhetoric will continue to degenerate, and we'll be accused of wrecking the economy. We'll be accused of talking down the economy, of somehow failing to clap for Tinkerbell when it all rests on our ability to support and promote, and not only to obey, but to support and promote Mr. Obama as he lends his magical ministrations to the economy. I mean, one of the silliest debates that erupted over the last couple of weeks was triggered by Rush Limbaugh's comment that he wanted Obama to fail. And, of course, everybody was saying, how can you possibly want Obama to fail? I mean, don't you understand that he's trying to rescue the economy? And, of course, the proper way to express that thought, assuming that I have the same perspective on this that Mr. Limbaugh has, is that Mr. Obama intends to create a socialist economy, and I want him to fail in that undertaking. Or, better put, Mr. Obama, working on behalf of the clique from the power elite that runs things, wants to create a global system of fiat money and centralized regulation.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William was just discussing Rush Limbaugh's remark about he wanted Obama to fail, and William was simply saying, well, what Rush should have said was, well, certainly Mr. Obama is trying to create a socialist society, or he is just simply speaking for the clique that runs things, that really wants to take us into a one-world system with a fiat money system, and I hope he fails in that. Rush Limbaugh did not make that clear, thus leaving the Republicans open to being divisive and, of course, mean-spirited. But you go right ahead.
Yeah. Well, the best way to express that thought is that Mr. Obama and the people who actually are running things behind the scenes intend to create a thoroughgoing, collectivized economy that would be managed by a global central bank and a dictatorial elite with a fiat currency that would be intrinsically worthless. Mr. Obama's part in this whole program is to finish the job of collectivizing the American economy, and I hope he fails in that undertaking. I do want to see the economy recover. I certainly hope that the economy will recover, that people will be able to find productive work, and they'll be able to restore some element of prosperity to their homes. I just don't happen to think that the course being pursued by Mr. Obama and the people who elevated him to his current position will bring about the economy's recovery, which is why I can't support what they're doing. But you're not permitted to make that argument. I saw an interesting conversation where Ron Paul, Representative Ron Paul from Texas, who is certainly not only the most principled member of Congress, not that there's a whole lot of competition, that's damning by praise so faint as to be invisible, but Mr. Paul is not only a statesman worthy of being put in the generation of the founders, but also one of the more lucid and capable exponents of that point of view, the point of view of the Constitution, limited government, hard money. He was wrestling with a news analyst, I believe, from MSNBC. And he was not permitted to express himself on that point. He said, no, basically the question is, do you want Obama to succeed? And Dr. Paul, Representative Paul, was trying to explain, well, no, I don't want him to succeed because what he's trying to do is not going to be good for the economy. But that option was not on the table, was not up for discussion. That's a really good example, I thought, of a point that you make very consistently, Dr. Stan, which is that we're not permitted to discuss these issues in ways that actually address reality. We're given pre-chosen alternatives and told that we have to choose either column A or column B when neither one of them has anything to do with objective reality. But on the subject of Rush Limbaugh and his opposition to Obama and the whatever insights that Mr. Limbaugh might have about the economy and issues of free market economics, this is somebody who in 1995, Mr. Limbaugh, was criticizing the bailout of Citigroup and a number of other elitist financial organizations that had overextended themselves with investments in Mexico. The so-called Mexican bailout was not a bailout of the Mexican economy. It was the same type of thing we're seeing right now, where it was a bailout of the creditors who had been investing in bad and horrible, indefensible undertakings in Mexico. And when the market started to careen in Mexico, they hit up the American taxpayer for a bailout of their own interests. They were saying that we're bailing out our heroic trading partner in Mexico City. Well, that's not true. We were bailing out the banks that had been involved in investing in bad speculative investments in Mexico and who should have been permitted to take the losses that come from making speculative investments. Well, no, that's not how things are done in our system of socialism for the ultra-wealthy. But Mr. Limbaugh in 1995 had the presence of mind and the independence of perspective to criticize the bailout, the so-called Mexican bailout. This lasted for a day because immediately after the program, he got a phone call from none other than Alan Greenspan, who hectored him for about an hour or so. As Mr. Limbaugh later described the conversation, Greenspan spoke and he listened. Now, anybody who knows how rapturously enamored Mr. Limbaugh is of the sound of his own voice would have a hard time believing that he could spend an hour simply listening to somebody else. And the fact that he was willing to listen without in any way interrupting or contributing to the conversation, as Mr. Greenspan expatiated his point of view, must understand that this was a real dressing down by Greenspan to Limbaugh, and Limbaugh changed on a dime. From that next day forward, he never criticized the so-called Mexican bailout. And this, of course, was something which was being arranged by Mr. Greenspan and fellow members of the financial elite. Mr. Greenspan, as the head of the Federal Reserve, did more to destroy the wealth of not only Americans, but people globally than anybody in human history. I mean, he was somebody who in the 1960s, as you pointed out, was an adherent of the hard money point of view. He understood, as a proponent of free market economics, the role that gold has played historically as a store of value and the need for an objective measure of value against which any currency can be measured. And at some point, he was given an offer he couldn't refuse, and he simply defected from that side to what he, I guess, assumes to be the winning side, the side of official counterfeiting and fiat so-called money. And as the head of the Federal Reserve, he created the conditions that we're now living with. It's been estimated that just in the last year, something like 45% of all of the wealth globally that had been in stocks, bonds, pensions, mutual funds, etc., investments of all kinds, 45% of that wealth has been evaporated. And that, of course, is a product of the type of economics that Mr. Greenspan preached and Mr. Limbaugh was willing to listen to and promote, and that has been taken up very enthusiastically by Ben Bernanke and Tim Geithner now under the Obama administration. And the only reason why you have people like Rush Limbaugh criticizing Obama, I believe, is because they're simply acting out of what could be called tribal political motives. They belong, that is to say Obama and his clique, belong to a different team from what Rush Limbaugh and the Republicans are promoting. And they have what the Republicans want. They intend to get it back, and they intend not to change a whole lot about the way power is currently organized. They simply want to use it to promote their own interests, and the rest of us are caught in the middle. But the thing I find most fascinating about all that's going on in the economy right now is the way that this brazen, undisguised corruption is being rewarded in the name of promoting economic health. And I'm thinking now specifically of the most recent $30 billion payout to the American International Group, AIG. AIG, of course, was effectively nationalized last September. It is a huge insurance company, but it's much more than an insurance company. It's also been involved in funding through investments and some of the murkier lines of financial relationship. Some of the undertakings of the CIA, historically, AIG's had a very close relationship with the CIA. They've been involved in this exotic new realm of what's called terrorism insurance, which is to say they insure certain businesses, certain properties against terrorism. And I would imagine the premiums in that respect are really quite high. I don't know if they actually insure terrorists. There's a line in the recent James Bond movie where a terrorist is described as having scars on his face, and Bond muses to himself, and he asks, I wonder if terrorists can be insured for things like that. Well, if terrorists can be insured for things like that, then AIG is the company that's extending that benefit. But AIG was run by Maurice Hank Greenberg, who for a long, long time was a high-ranking official of the Council on Foreign Relations. He's also very, very chummy with the commissariat in Beijing, the leaders of the Communist Party, the upper-level leaders. He was somebody who was forced out a couple of years ago through corporate politics, and it was revealed at the time that he was involved in Enron-style accounting, which is to say he was helping deliberately and fraudulently to misstate the earnings of the investments of AIG for the benefit of compensation and also for the benefit of other investments. Well, when AIG was bailed out last year in September, Maurice Greenberg wrote a note, I believe, to the Treasury Department where he said that the earnings of AIG have been overstated by a factor of 9 to 1, that they were really worth maybe a tithe of the stated value. The assets of AIG were worth maybe a tenth of the stated value that was claimed for that organization, which is to say, of course, that they were perpetrating a huge fraud. Nonetheless, they got bought out by the feds, and something like $130 or $147 billion pumped into AIG and through AIG, once again, to a number of people who had counterparty relations with AIG. That they were people who had been investors and creditors of AIG, Deutsche Bank, Royal Bank of Scotland, Citigroup, you know the whole litany. Well, just this last February, AIG passed along what has to be considered a ransom note or a stick-up note to the Treasury Department in the form of a 21-page document talking about the systemic risk that would ensue if AIG were allowed to go down. Now, if AIG went down, to use the language of gangster films, they were going to take everybody with them because they have counterparty relationships with practically every financial institution of any size in the world. And so they demanded $30 billion to keep operating so they wouldn't go down and take down the entire financial structure and cause the dollar to tank. That's another way that the dollar is imperiled right now. But according to this document, this is what I really find really fascinating. I'm quoting now from the document. The AIG had a AAA credit rating that was used to backstop a $2 trillion financial products trading business that grew out of an over-reliance on U.S. residential mortgage-backed securities in its investment portfolios. Now, what this means, decrypted from the specialized language of high finance, is that AIG, which is involved in insuring financial transactions, was investing its operating capital in the same pool of bad investments that it was insuring, and it was doing so behind this AAA credit rating. They're going out and raising money that they were investing in these bad securities that they were insuring at the same time. And they also got involved in such a way that they were sort of a central player in the so-called derivatives market that we've talked about, Dr. Stan. The magnitude of which is simply incomprehensible. I mean, it was roughly a year ago? I think it was July of last year that the Bank of International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland, said that outstanding derivatives had reached something like $1.28 quadrillion, which is, something on the order of 90, 92 times the value of the gross domestic product of the United States in 2007, or, I don't know, 10 or 15, 20 times the global gross domestic product of the same year. That's the size of this derivatives market. AIG was a central player in this whole thing, which is entirely fraudulent, I think. In my blog, I try to illustrate the derivatives market to the best that I understand it. And I said, okay, imagine this. You take a group of bad mortgages and you securitize it. You turn it into a bond. You don't sell the bond. What you do is you put that bond between two offsetting mirrors that are arranged in such a way that their mutual reflections trail off into infinity. You don't sell the bond. You sell the reflections of that bond, as many of them as you possibly can, to as many people as you possibly can, and you call each of those a profit. Each one of those reflections you mark down as a profit. Now, in order for this scam to continue, the bond has to be considered a good and worthwhile fundamental investment, or else the derivatives all collapse. And so in order for this to happen, what has to happen is you have to prop up the credibility of the entity that securitized that debt. And that's what's going on right now, is that they're propping up the credibility of all these bad financial houses that made all these securities, that securitized all these bad mortgage loans into these financial products, and then generated this huge funhouse mirror of distortion of infinitely repeating derivatives. And the idea is that if any one of these big houses, Bear Stearns was one they thought, the collapse of Bear Stearns could bring down the derivatives market. AIG says if we go down, the derivatives market's coming down on top of us. If any of these go down, then the derivatives market's going to collapse in this huge supernova of exploding glass, and then supposedly going to cut the economy to ribbons. Well, it very well might. I don't know what's going to happen. When this happens, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And I suspect that they're trying to hold this in abeyance long enough for the people who are really important to the power elite to be covered so that the rest of us will be cut to ribbons when the whole thing explodes, and that they'll be in such a position that they can create their own architecture of power to make sure that they're still running things when the current system collapses. The best alternative would be that the whole thing simply collapse under the weight of its own accumulated and unsustainable absurdity, and that those of us who've been trying to practice thrift and responsible living and austerity will be able to rebuild a free society on the ruins. But that's not what they're going to permit us to do. They're going to keep this thing going for as long as they can. They're going to engineer a controlled demolition. At least they think they will. I don't think that they can control it. I think this really is beyond the ability of even the most talented, malicious people to control. But they'll do what they can to look out for their own interests and try to make sure that the rest of us are on the giving end rather than the receiving end here, that they'll be able to continue to milk us for everything that we have and everything that we produce in order to build the architecture of power that will keep them in charge.
Well, I think it was so interesting this past week, of course, I think it was the New York Times that was able to find out where this money was going that we were giving to AIG.
Yeah.
And they found that basically the AIG had these derivative contracts with banks like Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, but they also had the derivative contracts. The majority of the money that we're giving to AIG is going to European banks, to Deutsche Bank, to the major banks over in Europe. Why are we bailing out the major banks over in Europe? This is the question that nobody wants to ask, but I think we really need to find out. I mean, and the problem with AIG is not simply $160 or $180 billion. It's probably somewhere between half a trillion and $1 trillion.
Easily.
And where is this money going to come from? And this is just a drop in the bucket of where we're going. And perhaps the governor of South Carolina is absolutely right. We may not be too far away from Zimbabwe if things keep going as they are, because they're going to have to create this money out of nothing, and heaven help the people who are dependent upon their pension funds or annuities or bonds or insurance policies, because they're all going to be vaporized.
There's no doubt about that. It's a question of when. And I think people underestimate how easily and how quickly this could happen. Once again, I hearken back to what's happened in Iceland. It took the government and the banking system and the economy of Iceland about 2 weeks to collapse. There's some speculation that I read in the financial press today that the British government is teetering on the brink of an Iceland-style full orb collapse that the banks in Great Britain are facing liabilities on the order of something like $43 trillion that they simply cannot meet. There's just no way that they'd be able to do that. So we could see Great Britain go the way of Iceland very quickly, perhaps by next year, according to some of the informed speculation I read today. It can happen very quickly there. It can happen very quickly here.
Well, of course, the thing would be is if the other countries throughout the world that are holding trillions of dollars in American dollars suddenly begin to lose faith in it and begin to dump them back in here, frantically buying something of intrinsic value, why, of course, with trillions of dollars suddenly funneling into our society, why, of course, it would just destroy the value of everything denominated in dollars. Our guest has been William Grieg. We're going to be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, William, do you want to get your website out, information on your material?
And we
did get your book, so go right ahead.
I'm glad to hear that. My book, Liberty and Eclipse, is available from Radio Liberty. It's also available from Amazon.com. In order to read my blog, Per Libertate, which I publish between 3 and 5 times a week, it's very simple. Go to willgrieg.com and then look at the right-hand side of the front page of that website and look at the external links. Per Libertate is at the top of the list of external links on the top page, the first page of the willgrieg.com website. Click through, take a look at what I've written. At the end of every essay, there's a link which will take you to Amazon.com to buy Liberty and Eclipse. It's about a 310-page book about the coalescing police state that we're living with right now. It's available at Amazon. It's also available, once again, at Radio Liberty. And I really appreciate the opportunity to spend some time talking with you every week, Dr. Stan. It's a wonderful service you're giving to our country by spending 5 hours a day talking about these monumentally unpleasant things that are of such urgent importance. And I really feel honored and privileged to have a chance to talk with you every week. Although we find ourselves immersed in such unpleasant subjects, it's important to recognize, and this is something we won't let us forget, that God is still sovereign, that He, of course, has the power to save, as the Bible says, the island of the innocent, and that He will make provision for those of us who humbly seek Him. And having said that, it's also, of course, a very important thing that we remember the principle of stewardship. If we have the ability to do so, we have to take positive material steps to provide for the well-being of our household. It's important to buy gold and silver, not because we're doing it as an investment, but we're doing it as a hedge. You need those things in order to get by when the dollar loses its value. It's important to have cash on hand while it still has some value because we have transactions that require immediate attention. Gold and silver are wonderful. Brass and lead are very important. Ammunition's becoming very scarce. Guns are flying off shelves for a reason. Those are very important implements to be responsibly used to protect our households and to take care for those whom God has put in our path. And, of course, it's important as well to have provisions in terms of food and water. If you have gold and silver, but you don't have food and water, there may be a time when beans are more valuable than gold, when rice and wheat are more valuable than silver. So it's a good idea to provide for your family in that respect as well. But in all things, remember that it's not gold and guns and grain that will help us to get through these dark days ahead of us. We'll be sustained, of course, as well by the Spirit of God. So spend some time on your knees. This is a perfect time to get right with God, because things are only going to get worse from here, I'm afraid.
I'm afraid you're right. Good night. God bless. Thanks very much for being with us, William. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Well, Dr. Stan, I do hope that you enjoy our conversations with William Grieg. I really enjoy them. Certainly one of our favorite guests. And what a privilege it is to have such great guests to present to the American people. As you know, we have almost 60 outlets every week, actually over 60 now. A lot of it is just half an hour a week, but at least the people are hearing the truth. So if you'd like to become part of the Radio Liberty family of supporters, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like to get William's book, Liberty and Eclipse, we do have it in stock now. That's Liberty and Eclipse. Of course, you'll want to get the new DVD, The Eye of the Phoenix. They're going out. I don't know that we've ever had anything going out as readily as this is going out. We've got a great new 4-CD set on Who Killed Bobby. We carry the book. I should say the execution of Bobby Kennedy. We actually carry the book Who Killed Bobby. We have a DVD by that title, and we even have a Kennedy special that you can get, a Bobby Kennedy special. You need to have this information, and you need to understand that they really do kill people here in the United States. We've got a great new DVD set on soy and the dangers of soy and soy products. We've got a great new DVD on Operation Keelhaul. This horrible, horrible thing that happened. How could you cover up the essential murder of almost 6 million people after the Second World War? Everybody's heard about the Holocaust, but why haven't they heard about Operation Keelhaul? Well, there are lots of things you will never hear about because the media in the United States is controlled today. And so they shape your ideas, they give you your concepts, they mold your reality, and this is the way things really work today. That's why some of the items that you get at Radio Liberty are so vitally important. Again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Let me suggest my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and or the DVD. Let me suggest our talk on the planned police state with the syllabus, the concentration camp, either the 4-tape set or the DVD, and that's called America Behind Barbed Wire, or better still, the concentration camp special, which has the amazing clips in it, a 4-tape set, the DVD, and then some other material that comes from the government about the civilian intern camps on military bases. Not imaginary, very real, and it's only a matter of time before it comes. But we have to have the American people on our side. They have to understand that there really are people who hate America. And they're working at the highest level of our government. And they're trying to use, of course, the force of government against those of us who support the Constitution, which is the law of our land. We have a legitimate government. We have an invisible government. And the invisible government, unfortunately, tragically, controls the reins of power today. They worked through the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergers, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Skull and Bones, the Bohemian Grove, and, well, so many other, and they're all subversive organizations. And our job is to expose them, and please help us. That's up to you to give us a hand. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. If you're in a position to support us, we'd love to have you support us. If you can't support us, go to our website anyway at radioliberty.com. You can watch our DVDs there for nothing. You can watch the links we have to so many other excellent YouTube and Google videos. You can certainly listen to our programs live, satellite. You can listen to them certainly archived. You can listen to the blog or the MP3. And then, of course, read our newsletter. The material's there. It's up to you to get the information. If you want to understand the background of the financial crisis, I'll go to my November and December 2008 newsletters or January 2009 newsletters. They will give you the background you're not going to get elsewhere about how they have created this whole problem. And why are they doing it? Because they want to use the tragic situation, the collapse of our economy, to bring in a new world order, a new world religion, to destroy Christianity. And this is really what it's all about. So please, of course, pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.